All right. While this is pulling up, I want to thank the session moderators for inviting me and for you guys for hanging around for the last one of the day. I'm going to be talking about my work with Kirk Shekel at the EPA. We're looking at arsenic bioavailability and fate. I want to start out first off pointing out a shameless plug for our recent paper that was published by Bradham et al. In EHP. And I'm presenting some of that data as well as some additional data that we've recently collected and some stuff that I consider fun. Won't be any surprise to everyone here that arsenic is considered toxic and it's something we need to reduce. This is a photo of some foresters, guys out in the Colorado area. Actually, lead arsenic was used to control for pests. And these photos are them spraying down these trees with liquid lead arsenic in solution. This is a practice that was done because it really worked really well. But recently, OSHA's not really approved this, and the EPA banned lead arsenate applications in 1988. But these things were extensively used. Now, the talk is about bioavailability, and bioavailability depends on what the organism is, will affect how much may be bioavailable, complexes are present, ligands that are present may affect how much bioavailable metals there is. But in general, everything dealing with bioavailability relies on arsenic or the metal of concern being desorbed from the mineral surface to actually be taken up. So from that point, what I briefly review here, the factors that are affecting desorption of metals in soils. And to no surprise, soil pH is a master variable. Will control what is desorbed and how much of a metal is desorbed. This redox state is important. So for arsenic, we have reduced and oxidized states in soils. The mineralogy is important. So if you have arsenic minerals that are naturally present, then will contribute to some extent what is bioavailable versus arsenic that may have been applied or contaminated source of arsenic that may come down from atmospheric deposition, maybe from the application of pesticides. The iron and aluminum oxides are typically a controlling mineral, so ferrihydrate, goethite, these minerals act as a sink for metals like and metalloids like arsenic. And then, as pointed out earlier, manganese minerals can have an effect on metals and metal speciation. To a lesser extent, soil organic matter does play a role, if for no other reason that soil organic matter is a source of carbon. So microbes that are there that may be able to exude different ligands capable of desorbing either the mineral surface itself or capable of displacing the metal of concern like arsenic as a chelated iron, and arsenic is displaced as a result of that chelation. So bioavailable versus bioaccessible are two different terms we're going to discuss. There's a variety of in situ or in vivo studies, rather. I've got it listed up here to estimate what is bioavailable. And it's concerned for humans whether or not you use a swine model or a mouse model or a monkey model. So all these are what we're trying to do is get estimates of what is bioavailable. The current project we actually use in the mouse model, and what I'll point out here, which one of the nice things about the mouse model is a little less expensive than both the pig and the swine, but the mice are raised here, and actually they will eliminate the feces and urine. It comes down, and if you see right here, urine is collected, and in this vial, he's got a little circular funnel. So the urine drops out in this vial, the feces drops out in this vial. So that's important because for bioavailability, you want to actually get a measurement of what was taken up in the body, and most of arsenic is pushed out or eliminated from the body in urine. But to some extent, feces or biosolids, depending on what is the correct term. I told my son I was coming here to present some of this data. He didn't know biosolids, but he enjoyed mouse poop as a way of describing what I'm doing while so far away, Daddy. So to get a measurement from different soils, we typically report out these data in terms of relative bioavailability, so you get a measurement, absolute measurement of how much arsenic is taken up by your mouse model. And then you compare that using sodium arsenate. So you get a better measurement and being able to compare different soils. Also, we did in vitro studies. This was the SBRC, which extraction, in vitro extraction. So you have a gastric phase uses pepsin and intestinal phase using bile. And we'll be reporting that data. Measurements done for an hour for each of those extractions is held at constant temperature, and then you get a measure of what is extractable in solution versus total contaminant. We also, our portion of this work was excess analysis done at Advanced Photon Source. So what is important here is the fact that this allows for in situ analysis. And then what we do, we get this data, we showed some earlier, you will get replicates. Our replicates are merged and normalized, and then we convert this to K-space, and we use a linear combination fitting, or LCF analysis, where we take our actual soil and compare that with standard references, a growing list of references that we have, for trying to determine what are the different phases present. So here's the results. This is from EPA method 3051A extractions of arsenic. We have a couple of reference soils, NIST standard reference soils, a variety of residential soils, some smelter slag, and then some urban residential soils. So we've got a nice variety of different types of contaminants, different sources, different concentrations. Here's the Zane spectra. So like we've seen before, all these different colors represent different soils. You get arsenic edge, which is at the oxidized edge is at 11,874 for the oxidized form. And you see these little bumps that are present here, which is indicative of the reduced space of arsenite bonded to oxygen. And then further down, you've got one sample or two samples, you get an arsenic sulfur bond. So we take those data, run the LCF analysis, and the results that we get shows that for many of these soils, it's predominantly is arsenic that is sorbed. So this is arsenic that's bonded to iron. We have, to a lesser extent, we have arsenic that is in a scordite phase of realgar and some arsenopyrites. So again, looking at the smelter slag, we get a greater diversity in our residential soils where we are having these atmospheric depositions and non-native arsenic minerals, then you see that predominantly what we have is arsenic sorbed. Now, jumping ahead, this is a comparison of in vitro versus in vivo bioavailability. So looking on the y-axis, you have a relative bioavailability, which again is the measurement of absolute bioavailability compared or over the sodium arsenate, which is easily absorbed. And these numbers here, at the low end, which is absolutely relatively bioavailable, these 6 and 7 correspond to those smelter slags. So even though you have high concentrations of arsenic in the slag, you have relatively low bioavailability. And then as we move up with higher relative bioavailability, we have some of these residential soils which were higher in that sorbed arsenic and less of the stable mineral phases of arsenic. On the x-axis, we have the IVBA extractions, and again, we have low in vitro extractions in these smelter soils and some of these higher soils, relative bioavailability is higher. We have higher extractions in the in vitro tests. So what's nice about this is we obviously can't go around the U.S. and testing all these different sites with XAS analysis, but we have a real nice predictive extraction for what was relatively bioavailable. And now, while we were doing this study, I had this idea of, has anyone actually looked at the arsenic that was in the mouse poop? And we had a little bit of extra time at Argonne, so we ran some of these spectra, got these samples, pressed them. This is an example of just the sodium arsenate, so there's not going to be any in the soil. But for our next series of slides, you're going to have sodium arsenate. The blue will be, or the first will be the diet, next will be feces, and then since this obviously didn't have any soil, that's absent. But here's the results from that extraction. So we see we've got difference between pre and post feeding, so that's the native soil and then the soil in the feces after. What we showed is for the sodium arsenate reference, we have DMA. Right, dimethyl arsenate, and we know that that's what the body does. And talking to Dave Thompson, who's the physiologist playing with the mice, he said that's actually it's not unusual. You may get some DMA that's exuded with the bile. So we got a small bump that was nice to see, but we didn't get any of these different phases that we would not expect. So going now to our reference soil, this NIST standard. What we end up seeing is the difference between pre and post. We get a large decrease in the arsenic 5, and then we've got the DMA. We've got some reduced arsenic is present, and this LCF is showing that we have actually an increase in the scorodite phase, which is somewhat unusual, but we're confident in this data. I was reminded when I was thinking about this of one of our greatest presidents, right? Trust but verify was by Reagan. So this data might be a little unusual, but it would be nice to do some further analysis and see, okay, do we actually get scorodite that was present? Here's a different soil where we had... this was a soil that was pesticide application. It was actually an old apple orchard. We see a little different this time. We got an inverse, we got scorodite. We see an increase in the amount of arsenate that was changed. But again, we have some DMA and arsenite. Relative bioavailability of this remained low. The last example I wanted to show is this was a soil where there was an iron treatment. So it had an iron precipitating solution that is applied. And the point is that you try to lock up the arsenic or metal of concern. You lock it up in the soil. This is an in situ treatment method. So instead of the EPA having to come in and scrape the top foot of soil in low, maybe moderately high levels of pollution, if you could figure a way to lock up the metal of concern on the site, you could save a lot of money without endangering the public health. And what we have seen in the control soil and iron-treated soil was... didn't get any change in the arsenic phase when it actually, in the mouse feces, we did see a small change with the reduction in the arsenate. We got some arsenic and this scorodite present. So what was relevant here is that even though we had treated this with iron, we actually did see some changes in the after it's exposed to an animal. Now all this, there's not going to be a lot of mice eating a lot of dirt out in native environments, but earthworms... the data has shown that earthworms are capable of changing different mineral phases. And this data goes to show as well that there are all things that can change the speciation. And if we do these different types of treatments, in situ treatments on site, we have to think about the long-term effects of whether or not that's going to be metal that's available. When I say long-term, I'm thinking a lot longer than 3 months, or thinking decades or longer. So what we have is a variety of different organisms that are capable of exuding ligands to chelate iron or have cytophores that may change iron. And the data that I'm presenting here is from some mycorrhizal fungi that we know have the ability to chelate, have produced ligands that can chelate iron and then remove it. So if you had an iron treatment, you want to make sure that stays long-term stable. So Mexican researchers that we are collaborating with had shown that this glomulus fungus, which is a very cosmopolitan species, for those of you familiar with this, with the Chinese brake fern that has the ability to really sequester arsenic at very high concentrations in their fronds. This is one of the fungi that actually forms that symbiotic association. And so these researchers had taken some, the plant's roots are grown on one side of this plate with the mycorrhizal fungus. The fungal hyphae, which is maybe, oh yeah, we can see it here. Fungal hyphae are sequestered by from the roots and they grow out into this mineral or into this side of the plate. And what we just recently had demonstrated was when arsenate was applied to the left side of the plate, so just the fungal hyphae, not any influence of the plant, the fungal hyphae are actually reducing that. This is just arsenate that was applied. This isn't some mineral phase or soil that was applied. It's just sodium arsenate. But this is showing that you do get fungal hyphae away from the root that are able to change the arsenate to arsenite. So this is something that may be present in the soil, may happen in the long term. So any studies that we do, any treatments that we do in situ, we need to investigate and make sure that they are indeed stable in the long term. So what's the big picture? What's the implications of these different projects? What we have is for this IVBA and extraction, we saw that it was predictive. We get an idea of what the relative bioavailability on these different soils were. And despite being high in some cases, like the smelter soils, the relative bioavailability was still low. Using EPA method 3051, the data wasn't shown, but we did see very high correlations with extractable iron and aluminum with the prediction of what was bioavailable. So you could use, again, this is a very common extraction that can be done if you have higher concentrations of arsenic in your soil. You can correlate your iron and aluminum with what's bioavailable. And then lastly, what are the long-term effects, the biogeochemical effects on soils that are treated? So if you have cosmopolitan species that are capable of reducing arsenate or capable of changing the iron minerals that you might be precipitating, then that could have an effect. And we showed that with the mouse that we do get some changes in different phases that we thought were potentially recalcitrant. So with that, I acknowledge the funding sources for my postdoc with Dr. Schaffel. Again, point out the Bradham paper for you guys to check out. And then lastly, I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate Dr. Schaffel. For those of you who don't know him, this is him. He's just made fellow, and since he's reached the pinnacle of his career, maybe he's going to move on to some other endeavors, but I think with that kind of swing, it may be a little less successful than what he has done in the soil sciences. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions if we have time.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, it was Zanes. Yes, we have not MMA. There, the question was, did you detect MMA? And I don't believe we do have MMA, but I did not. I don't believe in any of the samples. I didn't show all the samples, but I don't believe that we found any MMA in the poop.
Yeah,
DMA, yes, but not MMA. Okay. Thank you.
Well, that is. Thank you.